What's up, pod people? This is your master of ceremonies, Dr. Zoom, doing it to you in your ear hole. This episode of Doom, Timmy Doom is taking a break from comic books, and he's talking about some movies that came out recently, along with his special guest, Kingsley the Film Snob. Before we begin, Timmy Doom has a couple of rants he wants to get off his chest. So y'all relax, get yourself a cup of V8 and some soy milk, and enjoy the show.
Do you like instrumental rock? Do you need instrumentals for theme music or background music for your podcast or another purpose? Well, come to podcast.penmachine.com and you got them. And now you can get them on CD. Come to my site at buy.penmachine.com. That's buy.penmachine.com. And you can get the CD or you can just download them for free. Your choice. Come check them out. I'm Derek K. Miller. And while I may be biased, I think the Pen Machine Podcast rocks.
You are listening to Zoom with your host, Timmy Zoom.
Welcome back to Zoom. We're going to get into the meat of the show in a minute, but before we do that, I want to make a couple of observations, okay? Not rants, but observations, things that make you say, well, why did they do that? First observation, watching court drama shows, you will see at this point in the show where a defendant has to come before the judge. He's about to go on trial and he says something, you know, I got some ludicrous claim to make about my case. I got some, you know, stupid evidence I want to put in to effect that's ridiculous. And the judge says, you know what, you can't do that. Your lawyer is not allowing it. And if you want to say something, say it through your lawyer. At this point, the defendant says, you know what, then I fire my lawyer. I'll try my own case. Okay, this is when the defendant's lawyer argues with the judge about it. And then when the judge tells the lawyer, hey, I can't do nothing about it, the guy wants to try his own case, or I could tell you to sit back and watch the defendant, but he's going to try his own case. At this point, the defendant's lawyer gets all upset, you know, gets, you know, pissy and cranky, slams his briefcase shut, sucks his top lip, and walks out of the court, or just looks horrified at the defendant, or shakes his head. And I'm wondering, why did they write this? Why did they do this in the show? In real life, would a defendant's lawyer really care, you know, if this guy wants to hang himself? It's like, fine, I got six more cases I got to try. That's more time for me or to do those cases. Or he'd be thinking, okay, I'll sit back and watch him at the judge's orders, but I don't have to try the case. He could try his own self, and I still get paid. Another thing I noticed, too, yesterday I went into Target to get a pretzels, and they have these, I don't know what it is, these are the most tastiest hot pretzels I ever had. Good stuff. I mean, oh, I love it. Every time I go in there, you know, the regular pretzels, like they have the regular pretzels, and then it's like gourmet but regular, you know, no extra flavors. But then they also have the extra flavor ones, like the wheat or some kind of barley or some, you know, grape flavored. Or I don't want that. I want, you know, the regular pretzel. And they say it's sold out now. Yesterday, I went in there looking for it. The other three times I went in there, two out of three times they didn't have it. Like the first time, it was great. I went back two other times. Oh, we sold out. But we have the wheat. It's like, no, I don't want the wheat. It's not even wheat. It's like some kind of something, whole grain pretzel. No. Why don't y'all just buy more of the good pretzels? And this of anything, like every time they sell out, some store sells out of one type of a product, but you have two or three of the other products that are different flavor or different, you know, or different kind of the same thing, why don't you, next time you buy more of the popular kind, or buy all of the popular kind and don't buy the other stuff? I don't want the multigrain pretzel. So I went there yesterday expecting, you know, that they wouldn't have it. So I asked her before. I stood in line for 5-10 minutes. Yo, y'all got the pretzel? Yes, she said, we got the pretzel. I'm waiting, getting, you know, for my turn at the register, and two sisters are there. Okay. They were pregnant. They were young, early 20s. They both were pregnant. And they were just, don't you hate it when people just, broke-ass people. Okay, first of all, then in a little area, they went shopping in the Target, or they're about to go shopping because I think their cart was empty. They're about to go shop, but they bring the cart in a little area, food court area that's in either Target or Costco or whatever. Don't bring your cart in there. You know, your cart, eat first, or get your stuff and leave the cart right outside of the area where you can watch it, or take your bag out the cart. But don't bring the cart in the little area. But that's not the thing that I noticed. The thing I noticed, and when broke-ass people, you could tell broke, they ain't got no class, but they, when it comes to at the fast food restaurant or this little vendor in Walmart or something, and they ordering, all they're doing is ordering food, they take a long time, and they had their whole family up there looking at the thing like they're about to invest in a house or stocks and bonds, but all they're doing is buying a cheeseburger or a salad, or actually most of the time they're not buying salads. In this case, they're buying, you know, hot dogs and popcorn and pretzels or whatever they were selling. And the lady says, okay, this would be how much, you know, $5 or whatever. How much them cookies over there? 24 cents. I'll have two of those cookies. I'll have, okay, you could have put that in there with, you know, in the order the first time. Well, after she says, how much is that? Then they look in their wallet, they pull out their purse, they're looking through their purse like they're looking for, have the money out already, because it's only $5, so all you gotta do is take a $10 bill out and be ready. Okay, it's $6 here. No, she's rifling through the thing. Now these two sisters, okay, they both were pregnant, very young girls, I might say. The one girl, she had on a tank top. Now, that normally that wouldn't be bad if she was, you know, 1 month pregnant, but she was near full term pregnancy, maybe the eighth or ninth month. And not only did she have a tank top, she was wearing the tank tops that, even if she wasn't pregnant, you would be able to see her midriff, because it was a midriff tank top shirt she was wearing. She was 8 months pregnant, and you could see the stretch marks and all that. Now, I thought women their average woman, because you see a lot of women like that, okay, who do tacky shit like that. I thought women aren't supposed to be tacky. I thought they're supposed to know what fashion and style is, okay. Ooh, God, it's the stretch marks. It was, remember those TV shows where you have the skinny, pretty white girl, you know, that's all they hire in Hollywood, especially in the 80s, 90s, and in these sitcoms and dramas, I'm pregnant, I'm fat, I'm pregnant, okay, you know, I guess black women don't have that complex, or at least this sister didn't. A lot of women, a lot of lower income women, I shouldn't say, because I don't know if she's lower income, you know, just because she was at Target with her pregnant friend. She was 21 and had tattoos, and all she was wearing was a midriff tank top, being 8 months pregnant. It doesn't matter. You don't know. My point is, a lot of Springerest types of people, or I should say Maury Povich type people, they don't have those hang-ups about their body. So that's a lesson for you right there. You know, all you women who's skinny and stuff like that, take a lesson from these women. You know, they go out there to show their body, their sexuality, as sexual as you could be at 8 months pregnant, showing all the stretch marks and all the lines and dark crevices. I'm about to vomit right now. Ooh.
Doom! We'll be right back after these messages.
If you're a fan of science fiction, horror, crime noir, or dark fantasy, then you'll want to come join me at lordshaper.com/cryptographics, home of cryptographics podcasts. That's KRYPTOGRAPHIK. See you there, or you'll taste my whip.
You are listening to Zoom with your host, Timmy Zoom.
All right, welcome back to Zoom. This is your host, Timmy T. I got my boy, Kingsley.
What's
up, man?
I am coming through, man. Coming through fresh off the heels of Doomsday, baby.
Oh, yeah, we just saw that movie, Doomsday. I probably should look up the names of the people. But anyway, the actors, I look it up while we're talking.
I have no idea.
Okay, you want to give them a little quick synopsis of what the movie is about?
Well, Doomsday being in part kind of a apocalyptic kind of title, being the end of time, as in Clive Owen's Children of Men. This was another like Blade Runner / apocalyptic film.
It was Blade Runner, all them to me, all the post-apocalyptic movies from the '80s. Chopped up into one movie. It wasn't nothing original. That's what I was surprised that you guys wanted to take me to go see it. I thought you liked more original stuff.
Let me bring it like this, Tim. I looked at the freaking marquee and I had a choice between Drillbit Taylor, Horton Hears Who, and Madea, and there's a couple others.
There's more movies out than that. And then
we're talking about the Burbank 8.
Well, you didn't see. Well, there's other. Well, that's true. No, there's a Burbank 16 and there's a Burbank 8. There's other. There's like 24 movies.
What I saw up on that marquee was Child's Play, and I said,
well, there was what you call it playing? No Country for Old Men. Did you see it?
No Country's gone from there. I'm serious. Uh-huh. The movies that were up there was Horton Hears Who, or Who Hears Horton, Drillbit Taylor, College Road Trip.
I want to see that.
You're talking about Hot Rocks, Cotton Candy, and Skittles.
Wait, hold up. You don't want to see.
I want to see
college.
That.
College. It's black people.
I said, what movie? I looked at that marquee and said, what movie's got teeth? What movie's going to leave a bite?
And Doomsday? That movie, you can tell already, is going to be a trash movie. Like, what's that movie with Mila Jovovich? That series, Resident
Evil? Yeah, Resident Evil.
Yeah, trash.
Yeah, you're talking about the last one?
Trash. But I'm saying all of them.
The first one had a little promise.
You can tell that Doomsday is in that same tradition.
The first one had promise because it promised you TNA and good action. They lost their way in the second and third one.
It's just gore, and there's nothing to these.
Well, movies. But that's what was different about Doomsday is I said, here is a chance. When's the last we've had a good counterculture film? You know, a film that
said, wasn't gonna be, I could tell.
Screw society, this is our society that we're making with no rules, no regs.
When you looked at that and thought that the kind of culture, I thought it's just another zombie movie, or in this case...
But there was no zombieism in it.
Or the same...
Who got it?
You know what I'm talking about, another horror slasher explosion movie. You know, that's all I'm saying.
Oh, I think that's kind of selling it short. It presented a society which was severely underdeveloped, but it at least showed us a glimpse of what can happen, you know, not only in wartime when they talk about pillage and rape and plunder, but this is like post-Doomsday, and a society that formed...
You've seen it a billion times in other movies already.
Oh, of course.
And Road Warrior did it better, okay?
So Road Warrior did it better.
It didn't need to be done again. And and it's reminiscent of the movie you just saw with Will Smith.
You know? I didn't see I Am Legend, so because that dealt with one human being versus a society of count. Was it more than one human being?
And I Am eventually, Legend? Yeah, there were two other people came.
Oh boy, exciting! That's exciting stuff right there. I'm talking about Doomsday, man. This is about a hot chick from Britain who is going into a counterculture society to try to find the last remnants of her or traces of her mother.
Well,
and
I've never
in
seen
doing that.
I've
she has to take on, yeah, which is totally unoriginal. But I like the idea of having, you know, they set it up like paint by numbers. You got to go in there and you get, it's a search and it's like search and rescue, you know, paint by numbers.
And paint by characters too.
But we laughed, Tim, and we had a good time.
That's true.
They were riding a bus that said, out of fucking service. when in what movie can you see a sign on a bus that says, out of that?
I'm just going to run across. The lead character was played by Rona Mitra. She get on my, I don't know. She looked good, but she get on my nerve a little bit. Just because she, and I didn't like her character because she was trying to be a badass at the beginning and got her partner killed.
Yeah.
And it's like, they always do that in movies, but are we supposed to like her? And she got her partner killed unnecessarily.
Yeah. We actually hated her within the first 2 minutes of the movie. We both looked at each other and said, dummy.
But did you continue to hate her through the rest of the movie?
When I connected near fatal accident that happened to her as a little girl, and then I connected her with the tragedy she experienced, I felt sorry for her.
The only one I liked was the brother who got wasted.
Oh, man, the brother had one of the best roles in the movie. He was one of the more, to me, well-developed and complete characters.
Yeah. And at least they actually feel sad when he died, because like other violent movies, every time people die, they just say, okay, well. Like, remember that girl got killed in this movie? She got hit with an arrow in the throat.
Yeah.
And then Rona Mitra just went over and felt her pulse.
And like, said, she's dead. It was so funny.
That was supposed to be your crew.
It was so funny.
But yeah, anyway, yeah, that's what it's about.
And actually, talking about the brother, not to cut you off, but I liked how what's the lead actress's name again?
Rona Mitra.
That was probably one of the finest moments she had in the movie, is between her and the brother when the brother
got wasted.
Brother got wasted. Okay, I wasn't gonna spoil it for the listeners out
there. I already said that. And then plus, when you see his black face, you will know it is a science fiction movie with a black man. He's gonna die.
We all were fearing that.
But most people die in these kind of movies anyway. But just a quick rundown of what the movie is about, like what you said. I think it was Scotland. I think, Scotland, that was all.
I'm terrible with names.
Okay, well, one of those countries near England.
Oh, Scotland? Oh,
yeah,
you're talking about a character name.
No.
It was
an outbreak in a country.
It was
country.
In Glasgow.
Glasgow. I think that's a city in Scotland. But
oh, really?
The whole country of Scotland.
We're typical Americans right now, struggling over basic European countries.
But I was going to say, yeah, the whole country of Scotland got walled off, like the Great Wall of China around it, because it was quarantined because there was an outbreak disease, like in the movies Outbreak, the one I Am Legend, all that stuff that wiped out the whole country, and everybody got... Basically, what happened at the beginning of I Am Legend happened at the beginning of this. That country gets walled off, quarantined, mm-hmm. and nobody can ever get out
mm-hmm.
who's there. And 30 years later, we flash to 30 years later when they're all supposed to be dead, and the outbreak is happening again in England,
mm-hmm.
And they got to go back in to Scotland to find the cure, because they found out there are some people still alive in Scotland. That means they found a cure. And they got to send in Rona Mitra and her crew to go find the doctor who they think...
A crew of thugs and outcasts.
They wasn't outcasts.
And mercenaries.
They were regular soldiers.
They were regular soldiers. Mm-hmm. They were, you know, your run-of-the-mill, like, you know, you had your bad boy. You had, you know, the one that's going to take one for the team. And then you had
they had the black guy who got wasted.
The black guy was the one that was going to take one for the team. You knew he was like he was the heart and soul. He was
well,
the
at least
spine
he
of the team.
A little while. He lasted, you know.
He and I tell you, he had the finest moment with our girl. She looked genuinely like her heartstrings were pulled when he dropped down to his knees.
But her heartstrings wasn't pulled when her other crew member got eaten by the cannibals.
No, because she... And I appreciate... I don't like when movies make chicks men. And this was a movie that was making a chick like Trinity and Matrix. A woman is a woman. A woman isn't supposed to be a man. Men are men. So I appreciate it when this movie kind of rounded out her femininity when she had a very beautiful moment. We said, she can love and she has emotion and she can feel when someone that she cared for died. Before then, it was like seeing a man with tits, you know?
Yeah, because what they want to say is a woman should be able to be like an action hero, like men.
It's like a James Cameron chick or a Tarantino chick. Yeah, you know, they make them tougher than nails.
Do you not like? Do you not like well, Sarah Connors?
We've never known a girl. I've never known a woman tougher than nails. I have.
You ain't seen no woman cops who look like men.
Yeah, but we don't know their private lives.
Okay, well, yeah, but I'm saying on the exterior.
Still a woman.
You ain't never seen a woman.
I bet every 30 days we're going to be reminded she's a woman.
Anyway, what was the point? I forgot what else I was going to make a point about that movie. Oh, also in the movie was Bob Hoskins. I thought I'm glad he's still alive. From Roger Rabbit.
Yeah, that guy's a legend, man.
And who else? And then Malcolm McDowell is also in the
Malcolm
movie.
McDowell. I mean, the king of counterculture films, Malcolm McDowell. I'm a big fan, by the way, not only of what he did movies. In Kubrick's work, but there's a XXX film.
35 years ago.
What was the film he made?
Caligula.
Caligula. I'm a big fan of Caligula. What? I'm one of the few guys that liked that film, and I saw the penthouse version, the tricked out version with Bob Guccione. What was his name? That cut it from he was the publisher.
Anyway, so but ever since the late 70s, Malcolm McDowell's just been making bad movies.
Bad movies on top of bad movies. God bless him. But
that's why I knew when I saw his name, I said, "Oh shit!"
But whenever a director says I'm making a counterculture film,
this is not a counter. Okay, go ahead. And where'd you get this guy? This is not Clockwork Orange and what's some other kind of culture.
Well, you're talking about See, what you're just doing is presenting me a hierarchy. There are horror movies and there are lesser horror movies. Now, you can't say this is not a counterculture film because it's not Clockwork Orange. Maybe it isn't as great, but it still presents a counterculture.
But it seemed like you were looking for a great counterculture film. And
I'm not going to put this up there with Zabriskie Point, or I'm not going to put that up there with any of Kubrick's fine counterculture films. Right. But it did show a glimpse of society without rules. That is not our culture. Come on.
Okay, well, if we could give this on a scale, what you want to do? 5 out of 5?
I'd rather do out of 10. Out of 5.
I'll say 6.5.
Out of 10, I would give Doomsday a 6.3.
Were you influenced by my decision just now?
No, it's not a 7. A 7 is a C. I mean, as far as entertainment value, I'd give it a 7. As far as story development, it's going to get a 6.
When I see a movie and I get frustrated, like, come on, that's stupid, that takes it down for me. And I was doing that a lot in this movie, like when the bad guy was on top of the car.
That was at the end,
And when they was driving a brand new, I don't know if that was a Bentley. I think it was a Bentley.
It was a Bentley.
And it, no, come on.
Bentley that guy made.
Yeah, and you know what? That Bentley was in storage for 30 years, and they just opened it up, and the lights was on. It was shining, glistening.
Tank full of gas.
No problem starting up. I'm like, come on.
And the thing can drive 100 miles an hour in reverse. You know, it's just it's a lot of things that, you know, was a leap of faith here. But, I mean, nonetheless, it opened up the doors for suspension of, like, that kind of suspension. I just felt like when we got to that point, we knew that the rules could be broken in this film.
But I did like the fact that, okay, you go from a post-apocalyptic city, you know, the futuristic city to the post-apocalyptic, like, World Warrior world. Then you go to
medieval
world.
They were kind of segueing between, like, centuries. It was kind of weird, but we went from, like, post-apocalyptic to, like, medieval to, like, present-day London. It was really weird. Like, it was like watching Back to the Future at times.
And medieval, the explanation for that is there's, within the Scotland, you know, country, there's a bunch of people who live in the past and eschew all modern things, and then there's some world warrior world existence, and then there's the regular world in 2037. Oh, also in there is Dr. Bashir from Deep Space Nine.
Oh, really?
Yeah, Deep Space Nine. The guy who, the leader of the free world, that guy.
Really?
Who got the blood on his face.
Yeah.
He played in Deep Space Nine. I guess
the guy with the mohawk?
No, the guy who got blood on his face, splattered on his face in the suit, the president or whatever he was.
Oh, that they quarantined himself?
Yes.
Oh, really?
Okay, now you're giving away stuff. But yeah.
Sorry, that was a major plot.
Oh, and his name is Sadiq.
I mean, a major plot point.
Dang, I was trying to find his name, but I couldn't. I just had
Yeah, top actor who really delivers the part well. But I mean, I think all in all, I would just, you know, in this era, I was in a bookstore and a book said, "Who killed Hollywood?" Well, I mean, I'm not one that says Hollywood is dead, but we definitely need more counterculture films. We remember films like
good counterculture films.
Well, I mean, but you know, sometimes a very okay movie can open up the door to something stronger. I don't know who this film could influence me as a filmmaker, but I just think that movies like Dennis Hopper, Jack Nicholson, and Peter Fonda in one of my top five films of all time,
Easy Rider,
counterculture films like that, we have been known to totally change the way people think and live. So I think these movies are very important for
well, that movie is not in that category.
Of course not.
Well, I'm not saying it's not even in that genre. I don't think this is another movie to make money like a zombie or horror film. It's not trying to say nothing about society. At least,
well, it says a little something. Maybe on the outskirts of society.
That people said before, though, things that people said before in movies.
Yeah, nothing brand spanking new, but how we turn into savages in crisis and how we really are nothing more than civilized beasts and animals.
Okay, well, speaking of some other movies, what'd you say about... Oh, no, man, I'll get into that later.
Well, I've seen Meet the Spartans and I've seen... saw Meet the Browns. Shall I see any other meets? Meet the Parents.
Meet the Browns. I'm disappointed that you're going to see a chilling circuit, low denominator black filmmaker like Tyler Perry.
This being said from someone who hasn't seen one Tyler Perry film.
I can get the gist of it.
That's like saying Kubrick is probably one of the more boring filmmakers out there, but you haven't seen his films.
I know. You know what? Because, no, I was on a set of ER, and one of them black, you know, them people have their little DVD players, and they was playing that damn movie, the first one, Angry Black Woman, or Diary of
an Angry Black Woman.
And they was looking at it, and I could hear it, and the sisters was yelling and screaming just like they was in the movie theater.
And that turned you off.
And not only that, I could tell, I saw the movie. I didn't see it, but I heard it, and I know beat for beat what it was. So I consider that scene a Tyler Perry movie.
You saw a scene?
No, I heard the whole movie playing.
You heard the whole movie?
Yeah, while they was watching it on their little DVD player.
But did you see it?
That's the same thing. Seeing in this case, it's a beat for beat thing. I know what it is, and it's sad. And
like watching a woman take off her clothes through a bedroom window and saying, "Yeah, I took her clothes off." You didn't actually do the thing.
That,
you know what I mean?
You seen one?
Saw her.
Circuit.
You didn't take her clothes off.
You see
off,
one chitlin circuit. This is not the same thing as that. Anyway, I've experienced the movie, you know, and that's disgusting that you would go see that. But go ahead.
Hey,
and
you
tell
know,
me what you thought of
let me represent
mom.
For the black people out there. We got five decent black filmmakers working in Hollywood, and I say support every last one of them.
No matter what, that's disgusting. What if it was a black filmmaker who was making...
We gave Doomsday money. That didn't need anybody.
No, I wouldn't, because your ass dragged me over
here. What else were we going to see?
I was going to hang out... College road trip.
I ain't nobody going
to see
Seattle.
What are you talking about?
Popcorn Disney movie.
You know what?
Disney's disappointed me for the last 2 years.
Oh, the thing I wanted to say too, because I want to get to even get into discussion of our days when we was playing as an extra. Because you know, people who listen to the show, they don't live in Hollywood ever. They might be curious of Hollywood extra work. And that Roman Amitra girl who was in this movie, she was on the TV show Practice, and I was
Which Practice?
The Practice.
The Practice with David.
Yeah, yeah. That
oh, really?
ABC.
With the lawyers? The
yeah.
black guy? And okay.
Yeah, and I saw her on the set, and she was walking. She just, you could tell she thought she was a shit.
You've
just,
seen her before? The lead actress in Doomsday?
Yeah.
Really?
Yeah. She was on there for a couple of years. At the last two or 3 years, she was on that show.
Was she hot when you saw her?
Yeah, but I was mad because she wasn't paying attention to nobody. She was walking past like she was the shit. But Cameron.
She is.
No, what's that other girl, Cameron, whatever, the big girl?
Cameron Manheim.
She was like talking to people, smiling.
Oh, well, you know, different personalities.
And she don't.
Personable versus.
She just walked straight aloof. Past like she was the shit. Like, F you, Rona Mitra. And then Cameron Manheim, but Cameron Manheim, she did get sick that day because she was eating, like, she was at the craft table eating and stuff. And then later on, she got sick. And it's like, she had a. Her face was like greenish, and she was like,
really?
And people said maybe she is something that she ate at the crash table, because she was at the crash table. She was at the crash table eating.
Wow.
Food. I shouldn't say that. She was nice.
She was throwing down. Home big girl needs to slow down. Big girl needs to slow down. She could have double fisted.
And she dated brothers. You know, she had dated Greggy Hines for a little bit.
In real life?
Yeah.
Wow. Whatever happened to that actress?
Well, I don't know. I saw her in a magazine. She wrote a magazine article recently. That's the only thing I heard.
Wow.
And she's involved with some, with some charity organizations. That's it.
But what did you want to tell the listeners about background work?
Actually, you know, I don't even, I just was hoping we just segue into certain things.
But I would have to just say I did background work for the first time in a year and a half. I've been working downtown at a little production company, and I just did background work on a Heineken commercial. And let me tell you what, I miss the beauty of the interpersonal relationships that you get on set. We were in the holding, waiting to go back on set, and I was meeting up, and we were conversing, and you're talking about people from different states, different walks of life, and here we are at a round table in holding, waiting to get on set, talking about our background and what we want to be and what we aspire to be. And I tell you what, man, for that beauty, it's worth it, man.
But the beauty, I just saw it was a bunch of scumbags who were trying to not work.
Oh, of course.
Who were trying not to work for a day.
It's a mixed bag of nuts.
And trying to get paid.
Definitely. It's a mixed bag of nuts, you know.
As much as they could for working as
well. Yeah, but you got some gems in there. You got some up and coming. You got some solid talent that are being relegated to background work. And I mean, some of those people have been doing background work, extra work for 4 years, you know, since I was starting the game. I had to walk away, but I thought it was a good time, man. We laughed, we joked, and we were on set dancing all day, so, you know.
Dancing?
Yeah, Heineken commercial.
Oh, that's... y'all had to dance.
We were in a club.
That's different than dancing.
Yeah, you know.
Then they make y'all dance with no music.
We danced to Outkast and another song.
They actually played, because they...
Yeah, this was one of those that didn't have a thumper.
Okay, yeah, where they play the music for 5 seconds, and then they have a dump beat thing so you can stay on beat.
And then they say, okay, action.
Now, is there any, since we are talking about any experiences on any movie set, like a black movie set that you remember, like a star, a celebrity?
I have not. The only black film that I worked was Woman Thou Art Loosed, and... it was a bit of a nightmare.
Or white.
And what experience did I have?
Yeah, white or black, you know, don't have to be any movie, anything that you think somebody might find interesting, any star attitude that you think.
Probably, I'd have to say working Spielberg's The Terminal Man was the highlight, was the pinnacle of background work. I mean, Tim was there with me, but... Spielberg said it's like a slice of heaven that you will not experience on any other gig you do in background work. Now, to get to heaven was hell. But let me tell you, it was amazing seeing one of the greatest magicians in the world work his magic on set. And to watch him work with Tom Hanks and Catherine Zeta-Jones was a little bit of the amazing. And his cinematographer, who's one of the most acclaimed in the world, it was a Spielbergian set. It was like stepping onto his movies and watching true magicians at work.
Okay. Now, I was going to say the opposite. The worst experience I had on any movie set was Terminal.
Oh, wow.
Well, one of the worst, actually, because the other one. But they're all bad ones. Was on big budget TV shows and movies, and that was a bad one because the food was horrible, and it just made us sit.
Yeah.
First of all, yeah, you worked it. See, the reason why he liked it, y'all, is because he worked it for 6 weeks or a month, and he got paid, and was just a small group of people working when he did it. But the 3 days that he worked with me, I only was on it for 3 days, the first 3 days, and it was hundreds of us, and we had to wait in a big hangar, airport hangar, and just wait for
how many great conversations did you have in that hangar?
Zero.
How many new friends or friends for life did you make waiting to get into heaven?
Well, I met you and Ron, but I already knew Ron.
Sitting at the pearly gates, how many friends did you make?
What are you talking about? What pearly gates? You were sitting in a dusty-ass hangar. People was bored. Tim. They were sad. There was no water. Tim. Yo.
When you got on the set, was it like any other set you have ever seen in your entire life?
Oh, you talking about
life?
The actual set?
Yes.
No, but what's that make a difference to me? Do you know what the set was, y'all? Y'all saw the movie. Terminal set was just a mall. A small mall. But I'm saying I can go to the mall and see that.
Spielberg built this set from scratch.
He didn't. He paid somebody.
Exactly. It was for its time the highest, the most expensive
it
set
wasn't nothing
of all time. It passed Titanic.
Oh, and you know what? On that set, they had real. I don't know why they need to do this, but they had real props.
Spielberg's authentic.
Okay, everything, all the stores and shops you see in that movie, the real magazines that was out at the time, and they had Brookstones with all the. You know, they had Walkmans or whatever, headphones, whatever they have in the store, they had it in those stores. Mm-hmm. And they had real food and everything. Mm-hmm. And y'all was up there near the Wiener Schnitzel or whatever, eating free hot dogs. But anyway, the point is, it was all real. And dumbass trash.
Nathan's hot dogs.
And the dumbass trash who our background, that's what I call the background, the stupid white trash and dumb niggers, this is an interesting point, too. People were stealing stuff from the set. And they was making up. Remember, they was like searching our bags and making sure we.
You have people who are overworked and underpaid. And they're working in stores with merchandise that is at their beck and call.
They wasn't overworked. All they had to do was walk back and forth.
Well,
and people were trying
mind
to steal.
You, most of the talent was from L.A. And we were traveling. Any city that's near you and you have to travel an hour or two at 5 o'clock, 4 o'clock in the morning to get to set was our situation.
18 hours.
And be there for the next 12 hours. Our call time was 7. We always wrapped at 7 because Spielberg would then hop on his helicopter and fly home. It was 7 to 7 every day, but we had to get out of bed by 4, to leave by 5, to be in line by 6, to get to set by 7.
But
that
the
was
interesting
it.
Thing, I said, dumb niggas. But I was misspoke because one of the security guards was black, but he was black, so he might have been being biased. He said that the most people who got caught stealing, it was all white folks, and then the black people got caught stealing.
Maybe. But, you know, you're talking about, and I worked at Nathan's Hot Dogs, and Spielberg made sure every day it was fresh dogs. Krispy Kreme had fresh donuts. Baskin Robbins had fresh ice cream. I mean, you're talking about not only a practitioner and a student of the game, but his sets are the real McCoy, baby. The real deal. I'm talking about no 99-cent store stuff. This is premium quality.
But it's still the stuff. It's not amazing because it's... If it was
is amazing because everything's fake on set, man.
The point is that we can go to a mall and see that same stuff.
Yeah,
I'm not impressed. I'm gonna be impressed
in Hollywood
because we went to you go to TV shows like ER and what some other TV shows that we worked on.
ER, Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, George Lopez show or whatever, and you'll get fed decent. You'll go to a cheap show and get fed decent.
Jordan.
This was Steven Spielberg. What did he feed us? It was just like piles and piles of
craft
chicken.
Service was bad.
Piles of chicken and then something else. They had steak, but it was people was complaining because it was undone. It wasn't cooked.
You're not mentioning that Spielberg and Tom Hanks, they ate well.
But that's that's the point. We ate like shit. But the funny thing about it is that, and you go to a lesser paying show or a lower budget show and get fed real well. And that's the irony to me because that was one of the worst experiences. Because it was a cattle of people there, hundreds of people.
Cattle calls are difficult. Yeah.
Boring, and the food was uncooked, and that's too bad. And when we got there in the morning, there was no breakfast. There was just cereal. They just had cereal and milk if you got lucky.
But once again, I worked it for a month. Tim worked it for 3 days, but I promise you guys, Tim will never forget that experience for the rest of his life.
Yeah, as a horrible bat. And even our boy Ron, who we were just talking about, he said he was glad that movie bombed because of the horrible experience he had on set. And then, but the best experience I have on a set was a low-budget, nothing TV show called What Would You Do? It was like one of those, one of those handheld video shows.
Really?
Yeah, that you see on Lifetime or something where they do reenactments and stuff. And it was just like six of us a white man, a white woman, a white boy, a white girl, and a black man, a black woman. I was a black guy.
Any other races?
No, that was it. Just six of us, and they had us enact all these different scenarios all day. And if, and the crew, it was just a girl who was the director. Then it had a dude, like a handy dude who did all the tools and, you know, did all the props and stuff. And then there was another dude who held the camera. And the camera was like a one of those Canons video cameras, and that was it. That's all. And there was, and we was at somebody's house.
Are you serious?
Yeah, and we shot all the scenario. Like, we had to shoot a scenario with a guy who was threatening his girlfriend, and of course, it was the black people. It was me and a black girl, and I was like abusive towards her, and I was like shaking her.
Angry black man. Yeah.
And then we did another scenario where a guy got was next to an electrical pole and was electrocuted, and the other guy had to
silly white boy.
And the guy, he was. She told him to stand against the telephone pole and act like he was being shot. And then I had to take my shirt off and pull him up. Because it's like, what would you do in a situation like that? And what happened was I pulled my shirt off, wrapped around his legs, and pulled him off the electrified telephone pole. Even though in real life, that probably wouldn't work.
But the good said, Negro.
But it, the point was, that was the best time I had on the shoot. That was a low budget, nothing.
Wow.
No props.
Wow.
And it was just, and they took us out to lunch at the City Walk. That was, we ate better than we did on the Spielberg show. And that's,
well, don't
and
get
we
me,
had
yeah.
fun, and we was joking and laughing.
Yeah. The best craft I ever heard had was a set called Light Mike. It was a cattle call, but let me tell you, bud, they had crap. Bow Wow, Lil Bow Wow was shot at the GW, the Great Western Forum in Inglewood, California. It was a movie with Lil Bow Wow, but now he's, of course, Mr. Bow Wow. But craft service for about 400 hungry background actors, extras, was always
black
stocked.
Were they black?
Who?
Most of the extras?
Maybe. I mean, it was a mix, but it was like 60% us. And you know, 40% everybody else. But I have to say that was the best crafty. And I've had great, great meals on set.
Yep.
You know, it's hard to... Lobster, steak. It's hard to really, you know, they all are a blur when you do it more than a couple years. Unless it was like Tim, a really unique show that had a different format. But don't get me wrong, you know, Spielberg is the best. If you want to consider him the best, if you're a student of filmmaking and movies, he has to be at the top of the pecking order because of what he's done.
What?
He's coming out with IJ4.
What's IJ4?
Indiana Jones 4.
Okay, first of all, don't nobody want to see that old-ass Harrison Ford. He's done. All right, and I don't know what Shia LaBeouf is going to do in the movie. He's a goofball.
He's for the teenagers.
I don't want to see that. I don't want to see that again.
It's a good point. Do we really need IJ4? Maybe not. But Spielberg needs a hit, guys. He needs a hit. He needs his movie like Jurassic Park.
He needs
it like E.T.
I didn't think like Jurassic Park was good for one viewing. And E.T., I didn't like it, of course. It was sappy stuff. So I don't see where he's the best.
But let me tell you why Spielberg's the best, because he is the only, he's a prolific filmmaker. He is the only filmmaker that can shoot a white story, a black story, a Jew story, a Jewish story. Ask anybody in the game what filmmaker can cross racial lines successfully. Mm-hmm. Color Purple, Amistad, Schindler's List. Then he can push into the science fiction. He did AI, Minority Report.
All right. Well, okay, quit kissing this. The boy's been doing it for 30 years.
But no other filmmaker is that varied.
Spike Lee, Quentin Tarantino.
Spike's segue into Main Fair has not been as good as his black cinema. You're going to say Son of Sam is as good as X or any of his strong films, please.
A lot of people, Son of Sam was one of their favorite films. And then when he did The Inside, he did The Inside Man. That was a crossover.
Son of Sam's a mess. But it's Spike Lee saying, I'm just going to shoot a mainstream movie. I like Inside Man. Is it as good as Malcolm X? Heck no. But it's a very good studio film.
Whatever. You just saying it because you grew up on Malcolm X, your dad.
My dad is a huge Malcolm X fan. He's seen it probably about two dozen times. He used to gather us around the TV and say, let's watch Malcolm X.
Like it was
the only time I could bond with my father. no, but I mean, not to kiss Spielberg's behind, but name two other directors that have a filmography that matches Spielberg from blockbuster to black cinema to Jewish cinema to sci-fi. He is hands down the best.
You just gotta be good and stuff. And I don't care.
Clint Eastwood's a top filmmaker, but he shoots the same vigilante story every time. That's his shtick.
No, he shot. He was.
Every film is a vigilante story.
No, it's not.
Except for Flags of Our Father.
What are you talking about?
And three people saw that.
Okay, he did. He did. What's that movie? Millionaire Baby.
Million Dollar Baby.
Okay, that's not no revenge story. And then he.
No, it's not.
He did that jazz thing called Bird. And he did White Hunter, something movie called White Hunter. So what are you? What are you talking?
Okay.
Blackheart. So what? He's the very
his.
I got another one too, but go ahead.
The meat and potatoes, what puts food on Clint Eastwood's table, is a vigilante story.
What are you talking? He was acting in vigilante stories. He didn't direct them.
But Mystic River, and let me not go ahead and mention Unforgiven. Mm-hmm. I'm talking about Academy Award, the stuff that's put food on his table has been vigilante movies. Else,
Richie Cunningham, Ron, what's his name? I forgot my man's name. But you know who I'm talking about. Ron. I forgot. You know who I'm talking
about. Ron. Who you talking about? What name of the movie?
Richie Cunningham. He did that movie just now with Tom Hanks about the Bible and...
The Bible?
Man, let me look him up.
Oh, you're talking about Ron Howard?
Ron Howard.
In the Da Vinci Code.
How embarrassing.
How embarrassing.
That's because I don't really care for
the best-selling book ever.
He's got a very... He's like another Spielberg. And
Ron Howard is as close to being a multifaceted, varied filmmaker as Spielberg. Apollo 13, Da Vinci Code, he can go small on you.
But you know what? The reason that Spielberg can do all that is because they give him the money and they let him do whatever he wants because he had success early on. But that's the only reason. I bet you Spike Lee and all the others, they would want to cross over. But the movie studios was like, well, we don't trust that you can do a movie like that. But Spielberg could do whatever he wants.
Spielberg said he had the rights to the Harry Potter trilogy, or by the end, the Quintology, whatever you call it. But he said he had the first script. He said, I passed on it because I wanted a challenge. And he went and did, at the time, I think, AI or Minority Report.
Exactly. And if that was somebody else, the movie studio would be like, no, we ain't going to give you the money to do it.
Other filmmakers, I'm not going to mention any names, but let's just say Lots of Cars Explode and they're a music video director. They'll take whatever they get. And they'll be happy with it because it's a, you know. Let's just say they'll take the last movie of a trilogy and drive it into the ground. I'm not going to mention any names. But
are you not talking about my boy who did Rush Hour? And I can't think of it. I'm about to look his name up right now.
Let's just say the guy that Tim and I are talking about. Yeah, he's a good filmmaker. Is he great?
His name because they... the reason I can't say his name because I can't remember.
He's not going to change the way we think as a movie-going audience.
No, I'm about to say his name because he's good. No, what do you mean he's not going to... See, people don't give his butt...
His filmography is Rush Hour 1, 2,
no, it's not.
3...
He's got more than that.
X-Men 3.
No, he's got more than that. He also did...
And After the Sunset.
Oh, you said it before I said... Brett Ratner is a good director. People seem to say, why couldn't you get the Brian, whatever his name the X-Men? Why
Brian Singer's very talented.
Please, his X-Men wasn't no better or worse.
X-Men 1 and 2 was 2 times better than X-3.
It's the same thing to me.
He's
a capable director. Brent Ratner's a capable director, and he delivers.
What Singer has over Ratner, he has a feminine and masculine touch and eye. You have a feminine touch to his movies, and you have definitely a feminine eye. Brett Ratner is all brute force.
Why you say a feminine eye?
All iron-fisted masculinity.
I ain't seen no feminine eye in X-Men.
Usual Suspects, X-Men 1 and 2, the At Pupil. I mean, you're talking about... Up. Okay, go ahead.
This dude, Brett Ratner,
I know his filmography.
No, because you're sitting there looking at it now. Red Dragon, yeah, that's the movie he did. It was very good. It was a sequel to The Hannibal Lecter. Why are people dissing Brett Ratner? He's capable. He did Family Man.
He did?
See, you didn't even know that. And there you go. So he did a lot of things. And before, what's that movie? Sunset?
After the Sunset.
I thought that was good, too.
Well, it has Noémie Lenoir, who's an absolute goddess. If any of you all have seen Rush Hour 3, she's a French model, and she is one of the top three most gorgeous women to walk this planet. Naomi Campbell's in that top three, too.
Naomi Campbell looks like a witch, okay? Like she's about to...
And if she was in Tim's bedroom right now, he'd be foaming at the mouth.
No, I wouldn't, because she throws her phone at people.
Ooh!
What if she was abusive towards you? Would you like her then?
No, I would spank her. Why are you choking on your
She's
drink?
Bigger and stronger than you.
She's maybe stronger. She's not bigger. But what else is on? Okay, so that's Brett Ratner's filmography, which reads like the back of a cereal box.
I was going to ask about what you thought about a movie, but I forgot the movie I was going to say with you. Okay, but no, check this out. Oh, yeah. Earlier, when we talk about Cameron Manheim, because she's so big, that's probably why she can't get roles easy. And that's the same thing I'm saying about...
Cameron Manheim is the next Kathy Bates.
Kathy Bates, she won an award, and then people start putting her in movies because she's a capable actress. I don't know if Cameron Manheim can make any other movies than the ones she's making. But, Jennifer Hudson, that's who I'm thinking. She won an Academy Award, too.
What about Jay Hud?
I ain't seen her in a movie since.
She's in, because Tim is in the dark, Jennifer Hudson is going to have a major role in Sex and the City coming out in May.
Doing what?
She's going to be one of the single women in New York that's looking for Mr.
Wright. So
she's
going to be hanging out with Horseface and the rest of them.
As they said on the radio this morning, she's going to be...
they did say that on her. You made that shit up.
No, Jennifer Hudson is in Sex and the City in May. What? She inked the deal some time ago, right after, on the heels of the success of Dreamgirls, and now she's coming out in Sex and the City. I mean, they need a black woman. Do they have any black women in Sex and the City?
Yeah, I'm gonna look at this. Yeah, what year was it made in?
Dreamgirls is not the one made in '94.
Okay. Okay. So I'm gonna ask you what you thought of this other movie. But I want to look at. Well, forget that. What you think of? Since we were talking about Bryan Singer, did you watch that damn Superman Returns?
Superman Returns wasn't one of my favorite movies.
Okay, thank you, Feminine Touch.
It was too much of a feminine touch, and it was just a little too bloated. It was a little too much. I think it could have used a trimming. You know, sometimes, you know, when the hair is going beyond the ears, it's time for a trim. And I think that one may have just gotten a little long for me.
Yeah, that don't even look interesting to me, so I never saw it. I'm looking at Jennifer Hudson as an actress in Sex and the City. You're right, my bad.
Sex and the City, baby.
Carrie's assistant. She's playing.
A single woman.
She doesn't even have a name. It says Carrie's assistant.
I guarantee you she's single looking for Mr. Wright.
But could they give her a name? So she's not hanging out with them. She's the black assistant to the white people. Yes, what can I do for you, man?
No, this is not the 70s.
Hey, boss.
This is not the 80s.
No, what you talking about? Wanda Sykes plays that type of role.
This is the 2 G's, baby.
Okay. Look at Wanda Sykes' last couple of roles.
Oh, Wanda. Don't get me on Wanda. She has set us back a little bit.
She's supposed... Okay, and you don't think she's a smart comic? And they just underused her and...
Chris Rock is a smart comic. In movies, he plays the N-I-G-G, you know what. Okay. I mean, Chris Rock is very smart. Dave Chappelle is very smart. But when they ink a deal, chances are they're not showing off their intelligence unless it's a Chris Rock film.
Okay, well... Oh, so you thought that Head of State was intelligent?
Yeah, I thought it was... Nah. It had its pluses and minuses.
And that movie, Heaven.
But when he is screaming and hollering, you know, like Eddie Murphy is a smart guy. Was he smart in Norbit when he was playing the character Norbit? Yeah, but all around the movie was a bad reflection of his true gift.
Okay, so Sex and the City, and she got some other movies. Jennifer Hudson, so
she got has she that definitely is a black movie. The Family That Prays, The Secret Life of Bees. I think is a book from a New York writer.
Winged Creatures.
I don't know what Winged Creatures is.
But it says The Family That Prays, and it's spelled P-R-E-Y-S, so it might be a horror movie.
I thought it was A Family That Prays with an A. Okay, so she could have a horror movie. Click on it, see if it's a horror movie, please.
What is this request? Okay.
We're about to see what genre this is. I'll determine her career from this choice here. Oh, it's a comedy.
No! It's another Tyler Perry movie.
I can't believe it. It is a black movie.
This sucks.
It's coming out next year, baby. And he's the writer. And it's shooting right now. It's supposed to be released a few days after my birthday. Wait a minute, 2008? Oh, that's coming out this year.
You talk about black people being set back in all these movies. And
how
you're
is
gonna,
Tyler writing his movie so quickly?
You go, because it's shit.
Kathy Bates is in it.
You can write
Sanaa Lathan is in it.
You can write shit real quick. Okay, Sanaa Lathan. She is playing herself down by being in this movie.
Everybody wants to be in a Tyler Perry movie. They're opening up. It was number two this past weekend at 20 million.
Wait, white Kathy Bates isn't it? No, he's crossing over.
Alfred Woodard. This will be her second Tyler Perry movie. I thought she was in the first one. Okay, it's pretty good cast.
I can't believe.
No men, I don't
But it's
think.
A bad filmmaker.
No.
I'm just upset that
Tyler Perry's not Spielberg, but he's not a bad filmmaker. When he has a great story and a great script.
So what about that one when you saw that
anyone
movie?
Can put a camera on that. I could put a camera on Al Pacino and just say, act, make me look good. It's kind of like the New England Patriots when they were 18-0. And if you were the coach, you just say, come here, Brady. Throw the ball to Randy Moss. All right, go. Certain times you just need to put the camera on a good story. The rest is done.
Okay, I was looking up this actor, Common. Hey, Common was born 5 days before I was.
What month is that?
March 13th, 1972.
Oh, happy belated birthday, Tim.
Here we go. Wait, what? Why are you smacking me in the back? And I don't got no shirt on. This is uncomfortable. But I was trying to look up this guy's acting role. Is he going to be in Justice League?
Tim's a huge fan of Common.
I just want to see what's because he's in a movie.
He's over here drooling over his filmography on his IMDb page.
No, he's going to be in a Justice League movie.
Oh, gosh. This is not
playing
good.
Playing Green Lantern. He's playing Jon Stewart. Well, it says rumored. It's just a rumor.
It's
it
a, rumor.
Be a rumor.
Because isn't Green Lantern, wasn't that Bruce Lee's role back in the
no,
day?
No, you're thinking of the Green Hornet. Kato.
you just spit on my face. Oh, my bad.
But I'm talking about Justice League. You know, the Superman,
is it a black
Batman.
Guy?
Yeah, he's a really? Black, John Stewart is a black guy, so he's playing John Stewart. I can't believe this rapper who can't act, but he's the reason I clicked on there because there's a new movie called Street Kings.
Street Kings.
That's coming out with him and Keanu Reeves.
Sorry for spitting on you.
So with Keanu Reeves, when we saw that preview in the movie, you didn't look excited.
Street Kings looks like a regurgitation of Training Day and that Christian Bale movie that came out called like Hard Eight or something like that. Or not Hard Eight. Remember that Christian Bale movie that came out just after Training Day? It looks like Elroy.
Elroy?
You know the guy that did L.A. Confidential?
Oh, you talking about Training
Day? Yeah, all of his LAPD movies.
Okay. James Elroy. Or whatever.
James Elroy. It looks like one of his like film noirish type movies. Christian Bale. What was that movie called?
I don't know, brother. 310 to Yuma.
No, okay. It was Harsh Times. That's it. It looks like a regurgitation of Harsh Times.
Okay.
And Training Day.
So we talk about movies. We saw a movie that just. Oh no, it didn't win, but it was nominated for Academy Awards. What you think of what won the Academy Award for the best movie?
As a filmmaker,
you didn't see the movie, so
I'm embarrassed to say I did not see all of the best picture. I did see Juno and There Will Be Blood.
What did you think? Juno deserved to be nominated?
Absolutely not.
Do you think it's overrated?
Overrated.
Everybody
it was
saying
another,
that's the best movie, and she got nominated for
it. It was another indie film that. Indie Main Street film that just happened to get good word of mouth.
Now, when you said another, are you talking about another one?
As Sunshine? in Little Miss Sunshine. That's really not that great, but it just gets good buzz, man. And okay. Once you get great word of mouth, you can. There's no holding back.
We did see. There Will Be Blood. I saw it with you at the movie theater. So I thought it was good. People saying that movie wasn't great, but the acting from whatchamacallit, Daniel Day-Lewis, was what set it apart.
Well, typical Daniel Day. We've seen this performance in Gangs of New York. This is a tyrant's role. Any actor that plays a tyrant well, this is his role. I just didn't think that it was anything exceptional. I would love Daniel Day-Lewis to play the underside.
When we saw the movie, you said it, after that, you said that was a great movie or something.
Yes, I did not say that was Daniel Day's greatest role.
But you were saying the movie was great and stuff like
it. It's an extremely cinematic movie. Like, if you were to see that on your TV, you should slap yourself, because it is like Children of Men. It is one of those visceral, one of those, like, stunningly shot movies where you have searing images on your conscious brain, man. Indelible. I was impressed with so many shots that he did, because that's what cinema's about. You got these, like, small little indie films shot in apartments, but let's not forget, you know, Treasure of the Sierra Madre, Gone with the Wind. You know, you're talking about classic cinema where, you know, Scarlett O'Hara is clutching a turnip and saying, this is not going to be my last day. Like, these images that sear your brain, and I thought great cinematic images were definitely in.
Yeah, and I don't like when people say it was just Daniel Day-Lewis performance. Come on, look at the sets and all that stuff that had to go into directing
brilliant
that movie.
Yeah. And it was a P.T. Anderson movie. It was small set, so it was an indie film. It was didn't the movie have like an indie film feel to it?
Yeah, and then what's that? I'm trying to think of the actor. He was in Little Miss Sunshine. He played the preacher.
He was exceptional. That kid's something to watch. He's as good as Shia LaBeouf, if not better.
But I got something to say about that in a second. As soon as
he played a mute in Little Miss Sunshine. Well, I guess just a guy that just chose not to. What do you call those kids that just say, I'm not going to talk anymore?
People who are not going to talk anymore.
he played that kid. He played like a pseudo-mute in Little Miss Sunshine, who then, after one miraculous scene, is talking now, which was one of the holes in that movie.
No, well, he couldn't talk. It's just that he was upset with his family and decided, I want
to. Yeah, and it took one. We knew he was going to talk, and then it took one scene for him to talk. It wasn't like a gradual build where you have to work for it. It was like, let's go down and talk to him in the field, and then, okay, he's cured.
Okay. I'm trying to see if I can find his name. Damn, I can't find him.
He played two roles, so you should be able to. Whoever played two dual roles.
See, damn, ain't got it. Damn, I don't know.
Let me see.
It wasn't Henry. I forgot.
Why don't you just go to Little Miss Sunshine?
Oh yeah, that's true.
But you know, Best Picture nominations. No Country for Old Men, Coen Brothers, two. Incredible filmmakers. Like, those are up there. Those are great filmmakers at work. I mean, people have used the word masters. I mean, I'm a big fan of Miller's Crossing. Of course, The Big Lebowski. Those are guys that have some stunningly cinematic movies as well. I didn't see No Country for Old Men because of the violence.
What is up with that? You just saw Doomsday and you loved it, and then people was hit with
Doomsday
exploding.
Is like...
They got their face shot off.
It's
they got
camp. I mean, Doomsday became to a point where it was camp.
But no, it was. But it wasn't... The violence wasn't done in a camp way. It was done if somebody got their face shot off. That's what it would look
like. No Country for Old Men is going for realism. Doomsday, you don't believe. It's a, you know.
But Old Country, what you mean you don't believe? It's still violence. And then on top of that, at least No Country for Old Men was going for something more. They got a message. I want to see that movie now.
But you're dealing with in Doomsday, there's a scene where a guy gets, you know, grilled and charred. And then they fillet his behind, and then they get out a fork and knife, and they start carving into
But it wasn't comical. It looked like a real person being burnt up, and I didn't like that scene in Doomsday. Cannibalism. I didn't like that.
Yeah, it was a very cannibalistic. It was like, you know, if any of you all have seen Cannibal Holocaust, it was definitely on par with that. And they even like offer a chunk of his butt to one of the girls in the movie. They said, if you want to eat your partner. That spoils some of the movie.
Okay. Yeah, that was, that was gross. And then, okay. But the
Paul Dano.
Yeah, the actor's name who played in There Will Be Blood opposite.
Oh, he's so cute.
Man. It was opposite Daniel Day-Lewis with Paul Dano.
You guys should see his IMDb photo.
And he trying to.
He looks like a little emo kid.
He's trying to look sexy and shit. But anyway, the thing about his part in that movie, they won't say the name of the actor who had the role before him in There Will Be Blood. Somebody had a role before him, and they was playing opposite. They were playing that role opposite Daniel Day-Lewis, but they quit because that actor. Because in the movie, Daniel Day-Lewis is like a tycoon, and he's taking over a small town.
Bloodthirsty tycoon.
And he's going to face, sometimes he has little battles with the preacher in the movie played by young Paul Dano. But the actor who was playing it before quit because Daniel Day-Lewis, after they yelled cut, he was still fucking with him. Like on the, at the craft service table, he'd be behind them, taunting them, trying to smack him in the head and the ear, trying to fight him. Making fun of him, yelling at him.
Get out of here.
Yeah, because he's
trying to... Is that a true story?
Yeah, it's true, because he was trying to stay in the role, and the actor who played the preacher was like, no, I quit, I can't take it. And that's when he hired Paul Dano.
I'm surprised that's not in the IMDb trivia.
Well, I heard that was... I don't know where I heard that from. I think I heard it on Leo the Film Freak on radio show. But it's a caller called in, so it could be an urban legend. It could be. You know, it could be an urban legend. But I don't know. But I can see Daniel Day-Lewis giving him a hard time. But to me, his character wasn't, even though he was the preacher gave Daniel Day-Lewis a lot of hard time, to me he wasn't a match for the character of Daniel Day-Lewis's
character. No.
But how come in the in the poster at the top, the tagline is faith versus power?
Yeah, I mean, you know, we all like a good rivalry, but no, I mean, faith versus power, power was power, and faith was the substance of things hoped for.
And then people complaining that there will be the blood, it had no ending or ended.
Ending was a hot mess.
No, it was not. That was good, because you knew where you stood. I don't want
to PT has always had problems closing out his master.
No, because there was an ending to that. It was a definite ending, and you knew what was going to happen at the end.
It's the same as Boogie Nights. It's the same as Magnolia.
Boogie Nights. That was no. What you talking about? Boogie Nights ended too.
He pulls out his penis. Ooh.
But the fact is, it was a wrapped up ending. You knew where everything was.
I'm talking about how to end a movie.
Well, he's a porn star, so that's a good way to end it. Be like, how we never saw the guy.
Have you seen any of Chaplin's endings? City Lights, Gold Rush?
No, I haven't.
Have you seen
it.
The end of Gone with the Wind? Frankly, My Dear, I Don't Give a Damn. Yeah. Those are classic cinematic images, man. Don't be giving
me no question marks,
no bad music, and stuff up in the air.
The ending of Boogie Nights was not a question mark. I knew what happened.
Yeah.
The ending of
Punch Drunk Love was another one.
Okay, I didn't see that one.
End well. I mean, it's hard to end a good movie. It is very hard, but I think certain filmmakers know how their movie's going to begin and end, and some maybe just shoot and say, we'll see how this bad boy ends.
No, I don't think Paul T. Anderson did that with his movies. But anyway, Dad, did we exhaust? I think that, yeah, that's it. Anything you looking forward to?
I am looking forward to Sex in the City. And I'm looking forward to...
No, you just said that to piss me off.
Now, I don't know. I am looking forward to it just because there's no other movies like it, but...
What are you talking about? Man, forget this. Now I want to see superhero movie then. I want to see College
superhero
Road Trip.
Superhero movie looks... Why do you want to see College Road Trip so
What
badly?
Are you talking about? Because I like both of them. I think they're funny. I think...
The movie Raven got universally panned.
I think all the funny
Doomsday
movies
did too. So
all of Martin Lawrence movies get panned, but I like Martin Lawrence and I like her, Raven Simone, and them together is double funny.
He has a poster of Raven Simone on his wall.
No, I don't even think she's cute.
And it's crooked.
If I could talk to the white girl on that show.
You know, you like that little Asian chick on the show that's on that Zach and Cody show.
I like
show.
Her too. She good. Hell,
that girl gets on my last nerve.
That girl too. I think she's in that movie, College Road Trip. So that's a third reason to go see the movie. This is what I'm going to ask you about. I'm pissed because tomorrow at the Beverly Cinema in LA, they have a Grindhouse Film Festival every month. And
last week was Miss 45 and Holly Cat.
Wait, they playing... Wait,
Abel Ferreira.
What you mean? Last week? So they doing one a week?
No, 2 weeks ago. Yeah, 2 weeks ago because I just broke up with my girlfriend and she dumped me a week after I showed her those two films. So I'll always remember it was 2 weeks ago.
But was she a cinematic aficionado?
No, she probably sees about 5 films a year. And then I took her to 2 grindhouse gritty films.
From the 70s.
One dealt with a girl being raped twice in the first 30 minutes of the film, and the other one dealt with a chick that was beating up guys at random.
Well, wait a minute. Do you think that might have something to do with her breaking up with you?
No, but once she realized my dark side and my aesthetic as an artist, I think she says, I really don't understand this guy at all.
Well, that's okay, because she was African anyway. You want something that's mixed with some whiteness in it. You want some
white. I was going for the pure blood, baby. Those are the only ones that don't get infected by the virus.
Are you sure she don't? He was dating that African model, the bald head one with the high T-bones, who looked like Grace Jones. You know who that only dark skinned supermodel, the supermodel, that black dark skinned supermodel.
Oh man, that, she's gorgeous.
What? That bald headed bitch is gorgeous, dude.
Dude.
Oh, man, they just dude. Hire her as a token
because she could sit on my face anytime. She could fart in my face.
Well, you know what? If she sat on your face, you probably couldn't give her any pleasure because she probably got circumcised in Africa.
Oh, the female circumcision. Low blow. Low blow.
I can't believe you was dating an African chick. Well, don't. And you was hurt. Oh, you was hurt, right?
We met on the sidewalk, guys. I mean, I was literally walking home. Wait,
was it by a lamppost at night?
It was kind of violent. It wasn't in any kind of like
red light district.
It wasn't Pretty Woman type, but it was definitely like I was walking home from work, and she was waiting for a ride out front of her business, and I walked past her, and she immediately reminded me of a wounded cat peering out from behind a dumpster.
That sounds sexy.
So I immediately called her my alley cat or pussy cat. And I passed her on the sidewalk. And something said, Kingsley, don't pass her and don't go back and talk. Like, don't pass her and go back home and kick yourself. So I went back. I just said I wanted to talk to you because I don't want to go home and kick myself. I was expecting to get shot down to the ground. And she ended up giving me her MySpace page. We hooked up through there. We started dating. And then she broke up with me last week.
Outside, and you was hurt
she
over there.
She kicked my black behind to the curb.
And you were hurt?
She said, we are better off as friends. End of discussion.
Whoa.
And the whole time, I was doing her a favor by bringing her into my world. I approached her. Friend of mine said, women choose men. Men aren't the choosers.
Well, that's why I'm not in a relationship. F these bitches. But no. My point to say, did she say the words end of discussion, or did you just say?
No, okay. She didn't say that, thank goodness. It wasn't in a nasty way, but she says, I only see you as a friend. And what's weird is karma works this way. My last relationship, I told my girlfriend, I say, I'm sorry, I just see you as a friend. And I got it right back.
Smack.
From the hand of karma.
But she was had African features.
She was pretty girl. African features, 5'10", 145, cute butt, cute chest. You know, if you're 5'10", you don't have a big chest. You don't have, you know, but she was like a model's figure. Champagne tits, you know.
Wait, what the fuck is champagne tits?
A pear's arse. And,
champagne tits, does that mean her she was dark chocolate, and then her titty was the color of champagne?
Shaped like little champagne glasses.
Okay, that's
what
you meant to say. Okay, what?
Ours shaped like a pear.
But you,
a baby pear.
She's of African descent, but she's from Africa.
Her dad's Nigerian, her mom's African American, so she's more of like, I could say, pure blood than I am.
Does she have hair?
No, she had hair. She had like Ethiopian hair. What was really her hair was like Ethiopian.
Okay.
Chick was not on the. Let's just say, as far as beauty, she probably wasn't way up on the scale. Like, you know, I've not to brag, but I've dated, but I'm not into gorgeous 10 out of 10, you know, stunning chicks. I'm into more like cerebral, like cool chicks. And I was like, why wouldn't this girl be attracted to me the whole time? Like the whole time before we really started dating and calling us before we were an item, I just always thought, like, she's kind of, like, lucky to be with me.
Oh. So you had the light-skinned man's complex.
Totally. It got blasted.
That's why you went after her. Not because you thought the African mother-sister, motherland is the more beautiful.
I like chocolate sisters. I do. I love chocolate sisters.
You thought you were better than her.
But... I didn't think I was better, I stepped to her. She didn't step to me. Most women don't step to men, but she didn't make me a pass. Or like, some guys are clueless. Girls can be giving them signs all around one, and they would never pick it up. I approached her. I brought her into my sphere, and she kicked my black behind to the curb.
I want to get back to the movies, but after She dumped your ass. Are you like hurting now? Are you like going to bed?
Actually,
sad?
Like that night, I was stunned. Like I was in bed. Like I didn't cry, but I was definitely in bed because when someone says they just want to be your friend and they're not feeling you in more than a friend,
but you were
you're
feeling
like,
her? You were feeling
I was feeling her. I thought she could be the one. I was seeing down. I was That's a chick so in this relationship. I was picturing down the line, children, home in the hills, and she kicked my black to the curb, Jack, and I was hurt because I don't know what I did. Why wasn't she attracted to me?
Well, that's okay. You need to date white women anyway.
But not a subject. Not going
but,
there.
But going back to the movies that you went, the movie that caused your girlfriend to dump you was Miss 40. You saw Miss 45
and Alley Cat,
and in between there was Trailer. Because I've seen Grindhouse movies at that theater before when they had the Grindhouse Film Festival last year, and Quentin Tarantino ran it, but none of the days that I went, he wasn't there. But and I was pissed off about that. But between the movies, they show these old trailers, just like they did with the Grindhouse movie. But they show real trailers, and they also show some of the lead-ins to the trailers that they showed at the Grindhouse movies, like the popcorn thing. That's cool. But so you saw some good trailer.
Saw some good trailers. It was Angel Eyes. I think it's titled, but it's about a. It's so funny because it's about a small town girl coming to a big city like L.A. And it was L.A. She was and then turning tricks on the Boulevard of Broken Dreams, and it was just like a classic story about, you know, I'm from a small town and I've come to a big town. I ain't turning tricks, but that story is not foreign to anyone that's been here. We all know that you come here for one reason, you may leave for another.
But you went, okay, but you going tomorrow to see...
And I'm going tomorrow night to see Maniac and a movie called Hit List. So you can only imagine, just be ready to stack the bodies.
Oh, man. You know, I had to go to work, man. I wish I would be there. I'm pissed.
Hey, make that money, baby.
I'm pissed.
Make
that
money.
I want to see some Grindhouse movies.
Yeah, tomorrow night at the New Beverly. If you guys are in L.A., it's one of it's L.A.'s only Grindhouse theater. And all of this is the movie making capital of the world, and we only have one Grindhouse theater, and the owner just died and his son just took over the theater, so we were almost going to lose our greatest revival Grindhouse theater. But it's at the intersection of La Brea and Beverly, if anybody's in that area, tomorrow night at 7:30.
And another theater they got here is they got a silent movie theater. You ain't never
silent movie theater on Fairfax.
But I ain't been there. I heard it's $20.
It's expensive, but it's pristine. The movies are pretty much pristine copies, films, versions of it in 35. And I've seen a couple of Chaplin flicks and a couple of Mary Pickford flicks.
Did they play the movie live? Play the music live?
Uh-huh. They have an organ that accompanies the movie depending on the availability of the organist. Because if you're an organist playing the silent movie theater, that means you're in your 80s. So,
why can't they find somebody in their 30s who know how to play the organ?
Well, I tell you, most of those guys, because I go to a Rudolph Valentino tribute at Hollywood Forever Cemetery, and the organ is there, has been playing. And he played originally when the films were coming out in the 30s. He was like 20, I guess, because I'm like, wait a minute, you're playing in the late 20s? That means you're about 90.
Wait a minute. And why that's the person to go to a cemetery to go watch a movie? Then the fuck that.
No,
I'm not going there.
It's for Rudolph Valentino, man. The Iron Sheik.
I'm not going to no cemetery to watch a movie.
He was America's, what do they call it? America's, the screen greatest, Charlie Chaplin called Rudolph Valentino.
I'm not going to no cemetery
the screen's
to watch a
greatest
movie.
Lover.
I ain't going to a cemetery to watch a movie. I'd rather just go to a silent movie.
It's a tribute.
A tribute? You could tribute it in a theater. I'm not going to sit in a... on somebody's grave.
It's hallowed grounds. It's all of the legends that have, you know, inspired our greatest dreams.
Anyway, man, I want to see. Anyway, I want to see one of these Grindhouse again because I had fun last time when I wanted to go see those Grindhouse movies, old movies from the 70s. The one I saw had Yul Brynner in it, and it had some. It was like he was in his 50s. He was playing, an action star.
Get out of here!
And when he was running after the bad guys through the airport, but you could tell like he really can't run that fast, and he was in his late 50s, so they sped up the film, at that part to make it seem like he's running faster.
Like they do in those westerns.
But the people, the background people in the back was going faster too, so you know they sped up the film. I'm like, that's...
They do that in those John Wayne westerns.
I can't believe really they funny. Did that. But the movie was from 1974 and he was doing that. Anyway, that's... Anyway, so... Any last word?
This is my first...
You ain't looking forward to...
This is my first podcast, and I just want to thank everybody for putting up with me. If you're listening to this point, you've put up with about a good bit of what was on my brain. So thanks for being some awesome listeners. Am I looking forward to anything? No.
Iron Man?
No. Not looking forward to anything except for Sex and the City. And it's not like I'm like losing sleep over that, but come on, guys.
Batman movie. What Batman?
What movie really truly has us excited? You're a comic book fan, of course.
But
you're
excited
about Hulk and Iron Man, but what if you're not a comic? What if you don't live and breathe comic books?
Obviously, those movies have to have crossover potential. It can't be just for comic fans, or else they wouldn't make it.
And Dark Knight. We saw a trailer to Dark Knight and Doomsday, and that looks great. Now, I could say I'd be looking forward to Dark Knight, but I don't like Christian Bale. He rubs me the wrong way.
What the fuck is... But he's a great actor. What are you talking about?
But that doesn't mean... Will you want to drink beers with Daniel Day-Lewis? No.
But that's not the point. The point is...
He rubs... Doesn't Daniel Day rub
you
the wrong way?
No, he doesn't rub me... I liked his acting.
Christian, there's something about... I think he's a tremendous actor, but he just rubs me the wrong way.
You don't have to hang out with him.
Huh?
You don't have to hang out with him. Oh, you... Sorry. Yeah, no, that's... No, talk to your people and I can...
Okay.
Wrap this up. Hey, y'all, thanks for joining us. If you enjoy the episode... Send in your emails to blackpun2000@yahoo.com or come on over to the message board on Zoom and write a message on what you thought of the episode or what you want to see in the future or hear in the future, I should say. Go to www.doomcast.blogspot.com. Until next time, peace.